Blog Talk Radio.
You know the day destroys the night, night divides the day. Try to run, try to hide, break on through to the other side. Break on through to the other side. Break on through to the other side, yeah. We chased our pleasures here, dug our treasures there.
Welcome to Break On Through. Here you can travel realms uncharted, blur the lines, break the chains, open yourself to possibilities waiting to be discovered on the other side. I am Pam Ray. With me as always is my co-host Intimidus Rex. Rex and I are poets on a website called All Poetry with a group of poets called Late Night Poets. You don't have to belong to the group or the website to call in, to share, to listen and enjoy, but it is highly recommended. Tonight is an after midnight show. If you find that this show is not your cup of tea, please check out our other shows. We have 1 to 2 shows per night with a variety of styles of topics and poetry, something to suit everybody's taste. Also, make sure when you get a chance to check out the poetry anthologies put out by Late Night Poets on Amazon, because when you purchase those, you not only get amazing poetry, you help support these radio shows. And hello, Rex. How's it going?
All right. What's up?
Oh, you know, just enjoying life in general. Looking forward to hanging out with you. Maybe another cool poet or two. You just never know what's going to happen. We've got a great lineup of poetry. You know, the weather is getting warmer here. Life all in all is good. I had a delicious barbecue chicken dinner that I cooked. So, you know, all good, all good. And how about you? What kind of good stuff is happening in your neck of the woods?
Nothing at the moment.
Same old, same old.
Yep.
Oh, I totally get that. Yep. And let's see here. What else? What else? Let's see. I think we need a couple of drinks, a glass of red wine, and a martini. There we go. Life is good. And, well, I'm going to tell people a little bit about tonight's two topics, because we have two topics tonight. We have carryovers from the artwork of Lenore Finney contest. And then after that, we have we had an 8 spots only contest that we ran with the topic of the Tower of Babel, and which there was 2 prompts for that. There was a piece of artwork. Let's see here. Let me get to the contest. Okay, so there was a piece of artwork titled Rebuilding the Tower of Babel by Marcel Flissick. And there was, of course, prompt 2 was the story of the Tower of Babel from the Bible, Genesis 11, 1 through 9. I don't normally do Bible or any religious prompts, but I always found the story of the Tower of Babel very fascinating. And combined with the picture, the artwork, I just, you know, wanted to give people an opportunity to write to it and to see what they got out of it and to see the responses where people could either write to the artwork, to the story itself, or combine them both. And so it was just really wonderful and intriguing to see what everybody got out of it all. All right. Now, Rex, before we continue on with the show, I know there are a couple of contests for a couple of your coming up shows that need rights. And rather than try to, you know, talk about them after the show is off the air and people aren't listening, I want to go ahead and give you the opportunity right now to tell people about the contest topic for your Sunday show and for your Tuesday show.
That would be Taylor Hawkins of the Foo Fighters. That's this Sunday, since he just passed recently in March. I've got a contest up for that, and with a number of songs that you can play off or pick one of your own. And for Tuesday, it's on Alfred Hitchcock quotes.
And 2 really great prompts. I like both of those. Foo Fighters are just absolutely awesome, and it's just so sad that guy passed away. Such talent on the drums and a good singing voice too. Wonderful prompts for that contest and wonderful prompts with the Alfred Hitchcock. I like that raw, dark edge Alfred Hitchcock had just really a wonderful sense of dark humor. So I like that. Great prompts, great contest. And so if anybody's listening, check out Intimidus Rex's contest for his upcoming shows. All right. Well, what do you say, my faithful sidekick? Shall we get this ball rolling?
Yep. And what you've got? April Fools, or April's Fools, by Thomas B. You could blame it on the angels. Everything was perfect. Each day occurred as planned. Each entity knew, never grew old. Each experience anticipated. No surprises, always in tune. One day, like every day, an angel woke up, became aware. There had to be more than what was prepared. This angel asked God, what if tomorrow was unpredictable? What if we did not know what to do? What if we had to learn and in learning discern? Could you love us then if we did not know which way to go and weren't always sure? We're not always pure, but tarnished. What then? God purred. Life would have beginning and end. You would never know what's to come. So much to learn, more than a lifetime. Please, why not? It would be something new. You'd never know until you do. A comic tragedy with great extremes, life filled with need, you could learn to believe. Now, each in human guise have learned, most who live at this life are rarely wise. They hear it so often cried, why must I die? When someone tries to place the blame, they lie. It must have been some other guy. simple.
Excellent read there, Rex. The perfect pacing for this story poem. I really like this. I love the mixture of philosophy and humor. And the overall tone I get of this was in my short comment, which is an excellent writer that delves deeply and with a hint of sardonic humor at life changing for the amusement of the gods. And I liked that. I liked that it asked that question of what if? What if the angels went to God like pouting little children who were bored? You know, it reminds me of the way when your children are younger, they come to you and say, I'm bored. And you just imagine that. You imagine these childlike angels wanting a new playthrough, wanting something to amuse them. And then, you know, I like where it says, you know, keep saying, what if, and God purred, life could have beginning and end. And then why not? It would be something new. You'll never know until you do. I mean, it really does focus on how the idea of how gods or higher powers even, I mean, not even going on a mythological or religious level, but just people with higher power on a whim can play with the lives of other people. And, you know, just I thought there was a lot of thought put into this, right? And it was beautifully written and very well done. And Rex, you did a wonderful read of that. Your thoughts?
That hits on the idea of questioning that which is, and understanding or failing to understand the role they play. The fact is everything is laid out for them. They know what to do, how to handle things, and it sits on that note. And to question that thought puts you on an end where you no longer sit within the realm of augustness, because your offer's up in that first line. Life would have beginning and end. That means you would understand then what it is to actually be born and then to die. So you wouldn't have that that angle of knowledge that you were granted as an angel, so to speak. You'd be one of the fallen ones digging in and dying on an earthly plane of existence. And the idea hitting on the back end there's a notion of blame and shame, understanding your role, and then refusal of acceptance of that which is yours and not someone else's. The whole.
I like that. I like that you brought up the blame and shame of the end line, and also how you mentioned fallen angels, that, you know, angels without the knowledge that an angel would have, but rather going into that human guise, that human understanding. So really great observations there, Rex. And what do you have for us next?
Elixir. By Osama Shiba.
All right. And I'm reading this, I assume, right?
Elixir.
All right. Makes sense. All right. Elixir by Osama Shiba, and it goes like this. The alchemy of mysticism adorned with attributes of purity, seekers from early times journeyed spiritual paths. Since Amrita emerged from ocean depths, offering the magical potion, juice of soma, elixir of life, the philosopher's stone that grants the drinker eternal youth. In the body of the world, there is a soul within it, the hidden secrets of creation and immortality. End poem. What a beautiful life by Osama Shiba. And Rex, what are your thoughts on this, right?
Well, there is more that comes actually from the earth itself that is the potentiality for us as opposed to that which is man-made. And we've strayed a bit from that path and should be walking that once more, because the thoughts of creation and mortality, they can walk on mystical levels as well as mysticism and spiritual of once gone, that which is us lives on in the electricality that is us to begin with, which then passed across the universe.
Absolutely. That's a great observation there, Rex. I like that you brought up about how that which comes from the earth rather than that which is man-made. And, you know, a lot of people dismiss natural medicine, but they shouldn't, because that was the first medicine. You know, there is so much in nature created to create balance and create healing. I like that she went into a kind of mythology, a creation mythology, that she also went into spirituality, the spirituality of the seeking of knowledge. Another thing I think that this touched on was the reminder that we are always, always looking for eternal youth. There, you know, the fountain of youth, the elixir of youth. I mean, there's so many stories, so many cultures, so many beliefs where there's this desire to live eternally, but not only live eternally, like to live eternally in almost a youthful-like magic. And I like that you mentioned, and I have to agree with you, that the part about how there's this electricity, this energy through everything, including ourselves, that kind of just circles and blends one into the other. I know you didn't say circles and blends, but that's the thought that came to my mind and the image that came to my mind as you were commenting. And I really like that the line, in the body of the world, there is a soul. Just an amazing write on how there's, you know, everything has a soul of the natural world. And so just beautifully written and very well done. And what do you got for us next, Rex?
Lady Gaga's Feather-Brained Idea by Incubus. Look, Lady Gaga, her wardrobe mistress said, the meat dress was bad enough, but this bird isn't dead. You're going out at the Grammys wearing an angry hawk. Oh my goodness gracious, can you even walk? I don't care if you stunned it, that taser is, have you seen those talons? And look at that sharp beak. Beyonce's in a leotard, Shakira in a gown, but you look like a fool flapping arms up and down. Oh, that's not you doing that. The hawk is waking mad. Well, good luck with subduing it. Just enjoy the time you had. Beyonce and Shakira said in their statement on the show, Lady Gaga may have left us, but it was the way she wants to go. And poem.
Great read there, Rex. I could totally see you talking to Lady Gaga. I got to say, I really enjoy Ink's sense of humor. This one made me laugh. It was written to a painting where it looked like one lady, as he says in his AN, two women, one is a bird-bodied woman. And I like that he, you know, it was fun. It was fun that he took it in the direction of Lady Gaga and some of the crazy stuff she wears. I mean, you know, some of her just crazy outfits, especially that meat dress. And I like that he took it from the perspective of the wardrobe mistress saying, trying to give some advice and saying, maybe you're taking this a little too far. And really clever and fun that brought in Beyonce and Shakira and Beyonce and Shakira said in their statement on the show, Lady Gaga may have left us, but it was the way she'd want to go. I enjoyed that fun, twisted humor and a great look. To me, like sometimes humor looks at what kind of, well, I wouldn't say serious subjects, but subjects that kind of make you go, huh, like the fact that the fashion industry, I mean, some of the fashion industry's designs that go out onto the runway are things that just, they're just simply meant to grab attention, to almost be like a form of abstract or surrealism art. But are they would definitely not work for everyday wearing. So just a really fun and intriguing write and very well done. And Rex, you did such a great read of that. Your thoughts?
It paints the ridiculosity of supposed diva portraying themselves on stage and how they define themselves in that fashion and who, without that fashion, might be mediocre at best.
That is a really good point. Oftentimes, you know, it takes that fashion, that drama to hide mediocre qualities, whether it's physical or even the emotional, the inside of somebody, you know. So really great observation. All right, what do we got next?
Upon Waking by Emmanuel.
All right. Upon Waking by Emmanuel, and it goes like this. Upon waking, I spied the angel with his back to me. I called out to him, asking, "What is to be my destiny?" He turned his head to me and whispered words I cannot hear. Then he spread his wings and flew I knew not where. I tried to call him back to hear what he had said once more, but he had disappeared among the clouds he soared. It may not then be for me to hear of my destiny, so I'll lie back down and dream and be flotsam on fate's whim. End poem. That is an excellent write. I really like that one. How about you, Rex? What are your thoughts?
Oh, she bites on the notion of destiny and fate. And if one were to know destiny and fate, then you change that destiny and fate. So the idea is you make your own destiny, create your own fate. And the idea of flotsam is that which floats on those whims of trade, so to speak. It is what it is. You make it what you can with what you have and how you see that occurring, not what is supposed to be ordained, and then you don't create a backdrop where you might actually, in knowing what is occurring upon your destiny, to actually create your own fate before destiny has been fulfilled.
I like that. I like that. You know, and you got a really good point there. Flotsam is the wreckage of a ship or its cargo, or people or things that have been rejected and are regarded as worthless. And I have to say, I really like that in life. But, you know, I like that you brought up, Rex, that the idea that we need to be in charge of our own fate. Instead of spending so much time trying to hear angels or higher powers to tell us, you know, this is what you should be doing. You know, we need to step forward and take into action. You know, of course, I personally believe in having faith in something. But, you know, you can't just depend that you're going to get clear-cut instructions and everything, you know, without going forward. Sometimes you have to make decisions. You have to move forward. You have to try new things. And in that process of walking those trials and those trails, you create, as you were mentioning, your own fate. You become in charge of your own fate, your own destiny. It's a really self-empowering poem. But also there's a kind of, to me, a tone of sadness within the end lines. In that, while it speaks of, you know, not listening to somebody else, But there's also that choice to lay back down and dream. Dreaming can be a beautiful thing, but there's almost, to me, this sense of giving up. Rather than going forward, a sense of giving up and be flotsam on fate's whim. That is a powerful end line. I really liked that. So beautifully written and very well done. All right. And what do we got next?
A Dome Unlatched by versus Goliath. And you have a sound card.
All right. Here we go.
A Dome Unlatched by versus Goliath. Space. The final frontier. Inwardly and out, the emptiness filled. Dark matters. Death. Cosmos spin like a carousel of elephants. Most ignore unseen entities. Slapped in the face. Wind in the eyes. Watering. Aperture captures the moment. Lost the top of my head. These leaking thoughts journey toward the unknown. As I sail upon this ship, lazily lolling upon the lake, face like weight of dense stone. Endurance, passion, slip, flowers weaved in water flourish, especially during a spring shower. Circumstance, lacrimal drip, hours we leave with those cherished, like interstellar cloud, black hole devoured. Green hands steady, emerald island tan. Into a foggy night. Continue. End poem.
Wonderful read and write there, Versus. Thank you for the SoundCloud. Very much appreciated. Just a friendly reminder, everyone, if you're unable to call in, the next best thing is to make a recording of your poem, because then we get to hear your poetry in your voice. I gave this one the gold. Because I felt like strong use of imagery and metaphors. I like that he starts out with the line from the from Star Trek, space, the final frontier, and then mentions inwardly and out, the emptiness filled. You know, to me, what this speaks about the space inside. Like my short comment was, to me, and this is my thoughts, that it really touched on the held in and the unleashed emotions in the continuing realm of depression. I liked really all the lines all the way through, but what really stood out to me is slapped in the face, wind in the eyes, watering aperture captures in the moment, lost the top of my head, those leaking thoughts, journey towards the unknown. As I sail upon the ship, lazily lolling upon the lake, face like weight of dense stone. I feel like, you know, and a lot of the metaphor he got is using the imagery of the artwork, of the picture prompt that he chose. But to me, there's a lot of the not knowing what to do with the weight of emotion that you're holding inside yourself. And green hand steady, emerald island tanned into a foggy night continue. You know, it's just this idea of that continuing journey of fogginess and that hopes that there will be this light, this beauty, that you will come to. And so just a powerful and thought-provoking writing, very well done. And Rex, your thoughts?
Death. I'm going to hit that note because of what's writ. Most ignore unseen entities. The sort of space, the final frontier. Emptiness is filled, dark matters, death, cosmos spin like carousel events, and elephants is sort of that which surrounds us all the time that no one ever sees. Dreaming beyond the space in the moment and understanding there is more out there. But it also comes back again, circumstance, lacrimal drip, the thought of crying, weeping, hours we leave with those cherished, like interstellar cloud, black hole devoured. There's a kind of a notice right there of a ghostly presence. And the green hand, steady emerald isle, island tan, and then into a foggy night continue. There's that sort of passing into and through the fog onto that which lies on the other side.
I like that, yeah, and I can definitely see that. The idea of death being the other side, the final frontier, the journey towards the unknown. And, yeah, really great observations there, Rex. The mention of the lacrimal drip. Wow, I hear somebody wants to join in the conversation.
She better shut her pie hole.
But, yeah, that is really cool. You know, it's always interesting to me. And I definitely see what you're saying, and I have to agree with you. But it's always interesting to me how you can get different things from a poem, you know, especially when you bring in the abstract imagery and lines. But yeah, I really like that. Great comment there, Rex. All right, and what do you got for us next?
In Recognition of Other Realms by Bill Schiller. When peering through keyhole of a perceived locked door, some may fall on knees to pray or plead and want to see more. There's surely a beyond to con job we've concocted as reality. In peering through keyhole, we've acquainted with less mundane mentality. In ways of mystical comings and goings, watching isn't the same as knowing. To best realize what's more arise from comfort of a blanketed floor. In entering through door where keyhole is born, careful how to explore, one should never forget point in finding how truths in you may detach. Curiosity isn't actuality, only capable of killing cat and bone.
There you go. That's a perfect end line for your cat to hear. I really, great read there, Rex. Another one I really like, I like that he uses, well, he looked at the artwork of the girl kneeled in front of a door and peeking through the keyhole. And he mentions the keyhole a few times, which in a brevity, which I think really does a great job of emphasizing that that's an important part. Now, to me, the general idea or theme of this, right, that it spoke to me about was the thought of seeking answers without losing yourself. Like, it's important to seek answers. It's important to be open-minded, you know, but as that one famous quote says, if you're too open-minded, you know, your brains will fall out. And so it's that idea of, and I like the humor in that end line, that bite in the end line, curiosity isn't in actuality only capable of killing cats. I really like this all the way through, but some may fall on knees to pray or plead and want to see more. There's surely a beyond to con job we've concocted as reality. In ways of mystical comings and goings, watching isn't the same as knowing. To best realize what's more arise from comfort of a blanketed floor. You know, that whole idea of, you know, just realizing that you need to think for yourself, realizing that you need to stop dreaming about somebody else's reality and look into your own rather than continuing to kneel, stand up, you know, arise and find your comfort, you know. So just absolutely beautifully written and very well done. And Rex, wonderful read. What are your thoughts on this poem?
You can roll a keyhole and the door is a metaphor, or you can actually walk into it as literality of be careful of what you perceive, because that perception might not be what you wanted to perceive in the first place. And in knowing, you put yourself in a position where you might end up being a victim of your own curiosity, because not everything you see is something you should have seen in the first place.
I like that. Not everything you see, huh? Great thought, Rex. All right. What do you got for us next?
The Middle Sister by Forgotten Dream.
All right. The Middle Sister by Forgotten Dream. I'm one of three sisters, too unripe to be the teacher, the strong trunk of a burgeoning tree, not the youngest goddess, golden child with flowering smile, but trapped in the middle, a shaded sapling between towering sequoia and unfurling bud. Fiery hair flows like erupted lava, down rounded shoulders, glowing beside the flaxen fields of their gleaming tresses, my pale icy sea glass eyes swallowed by the creamy chocolate of surrounding irises. A patterned chameleon among lizards, I both stand out and blend in, but seek to shine like Sirius, washing, brightening the world with my radiant luster. End poem. And a beautiful write by Forgotten Dreams. And Rex, your thought?
That's the perception of oneself lost between the two outer edges, because they're the bookends and you're just the pages in the middle. And in doing so, it's always the outer covers that get the first thought of that which is, as opposed to, hey, you might tend to look a little bit inside and see the forest for the trees, but, well, it doesn't work out that way. Middle land is always a little washed under the thought of that which was first and that which is youth.
I like that. Huh. You know what? Go ahead and talk a little longer, okay?
Okay. Well, he offers up too unripe to be the teacher, strong trunk of a burgeoning tree, not the youngest golden child with a flowering smile. There's that ease of thought. Maybe you feel a little put out because one seems to be a smart one, the visionary, and the other one is the one who can do no wrong. And being a shaded sapling, then you're forced to actually look at yourself in a different manner and present yourself in a different manner. It's that one thing that hits on the fiery hair, like a robber lupted, blowing beside the flaxen fields of their gleaming tresses. And I like the thought with the pale, icy sea glass eyes, swallowed by the creamy chocolate of surrounded irises. There's a nice intonation of color variation in the eyes itself, which does offer maybe a thought to ingenue or mischievousness, which hints on the thought with the chameleon needing to outshine the rest.
I like that. Well, I appreciate you saying a little more. You definitely delved into that nicely. I just had to finish responding to a question. And I cannot type and talk at the same time. I'm just not that multi-talented. But I like that you mentioned about the sea glass eyes swallowed by the creamy chocolate of surrounding irises. I thought that was a really great way to describe the eyes. What I really liked about this, and she wrote to a painting of three women, and there the woman was younger, and then there was a slightly older woman, and then a much older woman. Now, I took the painting to be a representation of the same woman at different ages. But what I like is that, you know, Forgotten Dreams saw it different. She saw it as a representation of three sisters. And I liked that. I thought that was a really cool way to see that. And I don't know if she's a middle sister in real life, but I think, you know, she did a beautiful job and a really intelligent job of being and writing from the perspective of that person who feels caught in the middle, like not as good, not as strong, not as bright and beautiful, not the favored, and just trying to learn to love and accept themselves, but living in this world where, and I liked this all the way through, but the end stanza with the a pattern chameleon among the lizards, I both stand out and blend in, but seek to shine like Sirius. And sometimes when you feel like you blend in too much or stand out too much, it's difficult to find your own inner glow, your own inner luster, and to do that shining. And I like that she went with Sirius, the dog star. Now, isn't that one of the stars used to, like, guide ships or something like that? Or there's an importance to the dog star, Sirius, isn't there? Or a historical importance?
Something biting.
Okay. Well, I think this is just absolutely a beautiful write about trying to find one's own inner light and stand out instead of feeling like being pushed up against the wall and forced to blend in with everybody else. So just a powerful write and very well done. All right, and what do we got next?
It Could Only Happen in April by Orange Sage. In April, dogs bark and bark and bark. A chainsaw streams down the back lane, sinking its canines into the soles of trees. A cat runs rampant, scratching through dictionaries, colliding into computer screens and bunches of bananas and a rubbish bin sad, withdrawn corner thoughts. Then slides creamy smiles into a maiden's flawless dreams. And in April, when it is neither summer or winter, here, all anyone can do is draw their knees up into a question and find trust in that wide-eyed feline marmalade grin and hope. May will not be quite so boisterous. And poem.
Great read there, Rex. I have to say, I really related to this one. I'm pretty sure that I don't know exactly where Orange Sage lives, and I wouldn't say if I did, but it's got to be somewhere where springs are a lot like they are in Wisconsin. I like how she uses straightforward, simple imagery. You know, the idea of how the dogs, the cats, everybody is getting restless because it's that, you know, end of spring. And I like that she says that. And in April, when it is neither summer or winter, here all anyone can do is draw their knees up into a question, you know, and hope. May will not be quite so boisterous, because April truly is a very boisterous month, you know, full of, you know, just that borderline month where it's neither winter. And I like that she brings us into imagery and those simple moments in life that many people can relate to, such as, and I'm sure you can relate to this and many other cat owners, a cat runs rampant, scratching through dictionaries, colliding into computer screens. Just absolutely fascinating imagery. And I love the imagery and find trust in that wide-eyed feline marmalade grin. You know, that is, to me, a perfect way describe not only the cat itself, but how the month of April kind of teases you with promises of warmth and then withdraws it with that mischievous cat-like grin. And so Justin, an excellent write and very well done. And Rex, your thoughts?
It's renewal. The Alice in Wonderland thoughts running through your mind like the cat. And there's that creamy notion of everything that blooms and becomes apparent once more in April, along with the showers that come with it. And then May starts off with such a nice clamor of birds and flowers blooming because of everything that came in March and April. And so the thought was not quite so boisterous. All right, we've had enough rain for a while. Come let the sun shine. Let me go outside.
Absolutely. Yeah, I have to agree with that. Definitely had enough. And so very well said there. All right. And what do we got next?
Do You Hear Me by Fashion's Promise.
All right. And Do You Hear Me by Passion's Promise. Is it my turn to read? It must be. Yes. Yes. Okay.
Yep.
All right. Indecisive demeanor damned, borderline bravery broadens, and I search nightfall for answers. Multiple masks multiply, voices vacate or viciously attack the other, and I am lost. Communications carry on in crazy moments, and I stare blankly. Fusion casts a shadow on my face, and I become the whack job, resting amongst roses and lilies, smiling and talking to butterflies. Oh, the sweet smell of fresh-cut grass, hummingbirds at play. What the fuck? Screw them, butterflies and bitter-looking birds. Screw the seagulls and sunsets. No. You two are twisted, tired of tangling with uneventful minds. Let's venture off and jump off planes or ride horses bareback on the countryside. Fuck that. Beautiful rainbows and unicorns. Rob banks and be the next Bonnie and Clyde. Wait, what? Stop it. Stop rambling on. Confusion cracks the concealers on ivory face. Tears flush the freckles on cheekbones. I speak, but no one listens, or do they? End poem. I have to say, that was a very creative write, and the idea of struggling with, you know, perhaps multiple personalities, you know, or even just the different sides of a person. Very cool. And I will comment further, but first I want to hear your thoughts, Rex.
I go with the triad, the three faces of Eve. So it's on indecisive demeanor, all right, that's one. Borderline bravery, all right, that's another one. Voices vacate or viciously attack the other, and I am lost. So you've got two playing off of one. You've got the multiplicity of voices in one's head, so there is that one playing in there too. The enjoyment of nature, can't have that. And then the thought of singularity offering up that two are twisted. And the thought of actually doing something like jumping off planes, riding horses bareback. And then you got the other one, oh, do that. The next Bonnie and Clyde. So it's a rambling conjecture of possibilities within one's mind. And the thought comes right back to that opening line, indecisive demeanor. All right, what the hell did we do? Too much arguing going on back and forth inside one's mind, and the fact remains, despite all there is to do, we can't decide what to do.
Yeah, I like that. I like that you mentioned the three faces of Eve, and that you mentioned, you know, the back and forth, the, you know, trying to decide what to do, but never fully deciding. I first of all, I really like the alliteration that she put into this, that carried the story along. Also, the nice peppering of, you know, like, what the fuck that. You know, that worked well to convey the image, the idea of the back and forth personality. You know, I still think there's this thought of somebody, you know, struggling with multiple personalities, or maybe to me another idea of this is the idea of how all women, all people have different aspects of themselves. And to me, this especially speaks on the idea that women are supposed to be a certain way oftentimes. You know, there are certain expectations put on women on the things that they're supposed to enjoy, the things they're supposed to like, and what they're supposed to be like. And here we have somebody that's, like, holding in themselves this woman, this spirit of themselves that wants to jump off planes, wants to live life dangerously, doesn't want to be all about the color pink and the beautiful butterflies and the rainbows and all that. And I like that it's that question at the end, I speak but no one listens, or do they? Because, you know, it's that idea that maybe nobody on the outside is listening, but who or what is on the inside listening? And I like that it's kind of that cliffhanger question at the end. So beautifully written and very well done. All right. What do you got for us next, Rex?
The Tower of Babylon by Cool Mouth. Let us now dally and converse. We have both means and time on Babylon, its famous curse, and the preceding crime. I'm surely not alone in thinking the tale requires a bit of winking. Building a tower to the sky? To take the gods on? My, oh my. Methinks a simpler explanation behind the age-old curse. More likely was God's frustration with poems in free verse. And this is hard to counteract. The final straw may be abstract. I'm guessing there are cuneiforms, although I lack the uniform version of the divine aversion to claiming something is a poem from Solomon to Rehoboam, and not to mention allegory, unless it's extraordinary. It may as well just be a story and lay it up a tower, and in this divine allegory, you can't have that much power. Why don't you take this simple test, read it out loud, I do not jest. Could you remember it? Recite its lines from A to Z, like ever, ever? Then no might can ban its memory, but if it's adjectives galore, each preening like a metaphor, and rambling sentences run on, then for the love of God, be gone. Some languages call it a tongue, and words they're our dessert, words that are aching to be sung, and though we come from dirt, we build our towers to the sky. It's not for gods to question why. It's not about our station, but pray they have a strong foundation.
Read, Rex. I was really impressed with this fight, and I was glad that Kumiel shared it with us, because it actually wasn't entered into the contest because it was a pre-write, but they were nice enough to share it on the side of the contest and say that we could read it on the contest, and I really appreciated that. First of all, you know, wonderful rhyme and flow. And I like that from the story of the Tower of Babel, they look at different perspectives, at what the people were thinking, possibly what the gods were thinking, possibly, you know. And I thought there was some great, you know, clever and fun lines to this. We build our towers to the skies, not for gods to question why. It's not above our station, but pray they have a strong foundation. And why don't you take this simple test, read it out loud, I do not jest. Could you remember, recite to lines from A to Z, like ever, ever? Then no might can ban its memory, but if its adjectives galore, it's preening like a metaphor, and rambling sentences run on and on, then for the love of God, be gone. You know, so, but this has the humor, because it gives thought to, you know, what, you know, the gods were thinking, and, you know, but the whole main theme of this poem, which I enjoyed and appreciated, was that sardonic teasing tone of perhaps, you know, they got frustrated with those free verse poems, which made me laugh, you know, and because, you know, I know for some people it's a serious issue to talk about what is better, free verse or rhyme. I like them both. I usually write more in free verse, but, you know, this made me laugh. I really liked, I'm guessing there are cuneiforms, although I lack the uniform that would confirm my version of the divine aversion. You know, it's funny. I like it. It's funny. It's a great sense of humor. It pokes fun. To me, it pokes fun at how absolutely serious some people take their committed form of poetry without being willing to change. So just excellent fun writing, very well done. And Rex, your thoughts?
Well, it bites at the thought of Babylon to begin with. Well, not Babylon. It does fit on the thought of Babylon, but it kind of hits that notion of Babel too. But the Babylon angle on this is it burning it down to the ground, so to speak, as because of its sinful retina. But when it hits on the thought of Babel, it also hits on that thought of being that much wanting to be like the gods who build that tower and offer up themselves as that which is, as opposed to that which is supposed to pay homage to. And he bites at that with the thought of free verse. That was a nice touch. I like the thought with the cuneiform and that that whole stanza hitting on the thought to Solomon, Rehoboam, Allegory, and allegory, and what, how one can't have that much power, and so hence the sort of destroying the Tower of Babel, and then spreading all the peoples worldwide with different languages, so they could no longer work in concert together, but would have to work on a different level of sort to actually understand each other. So that comes with the back end of this. We hit a. Some languages call it tongue, and words that are obvious are words that are aching to be sung. And though we come from dirt, we build our towers to the sky. It's not for God's question why. It's not above our station, but pray they have a strong foundation. So the idea is, you know what? Nothing is ever better than anything. Good and powerful to be that of godly form is to kind of test the equation that you don't have a strong enough foundation to stand on there.
I like that. I like that comment there, Rex. And I think, and you've got a really good point about the foundation. And, you know, and I like how you mentioned the allegory and allegory and some of the wordplay that was in there. And so great comment. And all right. And yeah, I like I said earlier, I find the story of the Tower of Babel so fascinating in the idea of, you know, people working together and then this God, these angels coming down and messing up the language. And it's one of those stories that I really think that you can get some different ideas and different thoughts from. And they don't even have to be spiritual or religious, we got some excellent writes from both of these contests. All right, what do we got next?
Babel, Babel by Dan D. And you got a SoundCloud.
All right, here we go.
Babel, Babel by Diane D. So the big guy wouldn't let them be to bake mortar without using stone. They needed that stairway to heaven and a big city to settle their homes. They spoke the same simple jargon. United, they worked on their tower. They wanted their name in spotlight, but God was the one with the power. Now, God didn't like that they united. I think he wasn't feeling secure. But instead of trying to disseminate, he does something not so mature. So God huffed and he puffed, and he blew their arses all over the world. Then he mixed up all their vocabulary, and Babel was all that they hurled. So that's why there's 7,000 languages. And when God removed one of the B's, he changed it to Babel from Babel, and has continued to do as he pleased. End poem.
Great read and write, Diane. Thank you for the SoundCloud. It's very much appreciated. And Rex, your thoughts on this poem?
Now that's funny. And she kept the Babel and the Babel together, offering up why one is one as opposed to the other, and left it as Babel to continue. Because, hey, you know what? I'm the big guy. I can do as I please.
Was that your entire comment?
Yep.
Okay, yes, funny. I thought there was great wordplay, great word usage. You know, as someone who's always been interested in, you know, where words came from and how they developed, I did like that she put together the Babel, B-A-B-E-L, and Babel, B-A-B-B-L-E. Wonderful word choices. Like, I liked that she used the word jargon. I also liked that she wrote to the painting, but she also wrote to the story, too. Like, the painting shows a more modern-day Tower of Babel surrounded by helicopters and electronics and people on computers. And, you know, so I thought where she says they wanted their name in spotlight was a perfect line for bringing in that modern-day feel of what people are searching for. Like the original Tower of Babel story, they're searching to get their name, you know, to go up to heaven, to be gods. And in the same way, when you look at people who want their 15 minutes of fame, that would be like what I get that idea from. And I also like where you said, so God huffed and puffed and blew their arses all over the world. Really like that she made God, the big bad wolf, and the three little pigs, and the huffin' and the puffin'. And really nice little tidbit of education here in the idea that, the information that there's 7,000 languages. I thought that was a really great touch. You can tell that Diane did some research for this poem. I really appreciate that, and I thought this was wonderfully done and a lot of fun, hard-hitting humor. So very well done. All right, what do we got next?
Worlds apart, yet nothing is impossible, by Forgotten Dreams. Well,
I lost track. I didn't know it was my turn to read. That's your job to remind me of that. All right. World Apart, Yet Nothing is Impossible, by Forgotten Dream. And it goes like this. We once spoke the same language, my breath harmonizing with the pauses in your speech, eyes meeting silently, whole exchanges held in a series of blinks and half smiles, fingers danced in tandem along the day, a symphony of us working together. But now my tongue is tangled, muddled sounds emit from your strangled lips, vexation drenches like winter storms, bodies soaked and curved like whiplash trees, We part scattering in the wind like dandelion pappus, like glances swapped quickly, like shooting stars streaking, pining, whispered, for the day when deep roots stretch through distant soil, searching, end poem. Now that is absolutely just a beautiful write. And Rex, your thoughts?
Well, just a beginning to end notion, harmonizing with the poison in your speech, a nice touch to everybody knowing each other. But then again, society was such a small community at that point in time. So the idea of we part scattering in the wind like dandelion pappus, last glances swap quickly like shooting stars streaking, pining whispered, there's that notion of understanding that in order to propagate fully and without, say, a continued existence where everyone is the same, people had to spread. And that idea is you grow differently, you learn new things, you trade in ideas. And that's where the last line comes in. For the day when deep roots stretch through distant soil searching, there's that notion of coming together once more, even though everybody holds different entities now, different culture, different streams of life lived.
I like that. I like that. I like that you saw it as the community reaching out, stretching out, growing past the condensed. You know, it actually made me curious to, I'm going to have to look this up. I was trying to look it up, but it's too much information to read at once. Is what was, when they were building the Tower of Babel, what was the population of that particular area? Like, you know, is there any resources out there or estimated numbers of what the population would have been and how many people would have been working together on that tower? Now, I took this on a more personal level because I guess I'm just that kind of person. I took it as not a community, but two individuals who once understood each other but have drifted apart. But I think it works well either way. I think, you know, sometimes whether it's, you know, neighbor versus neighbor, community, ancient biblical times or modern times, or a one-on-one relationship, friendship, love, whatever, there's this parting and this wishing for the way things once were. I really like the imagery. I mean, I like this all the way through, but I thought we part scattering in the wind like dandelion pappus, last glances swapped quickly like shooting stars streaked. I really like that line and the imagery of the dandelion seeds. And I see that definitely how what you were saying, Rex, and the idea of it's only when, you know, the dandelion seeds are willing to float away that they can be planted and new plants can grow. And I just thought that was a beautiful idea of, you know, like maybe things didn't go exactly as planned. Maybe, you know, love didn't go exactly as planned. Maybe building the tower to the heavens did not go exactly as planned, but now here's an opportunity for new growth. So I just, you know, I thought this was beautifully written and very well done. All right, what do we got next?
Multi-Story Mayhem by Incubus 2. Pink Floyd blaring out, one brick in the wall, as cowboy contractors cut corners, cuttlefish cement mixed with weak tea and cigarette butts. Architects still in diapers, pointing fingers at still imaginary images, as planners scurry like worker ants, reading plans written in another's tongue. Health and safety officers, like hieroglyphs, stand against walls of sandstone, leaning at an angle. Cranes, like overworked beasts of burden, scream, lifting weights beyond their capabilities, as drivers daydream, smoking cheap cigars, their vision obscured by stale smoke and watery eyes. Suburban slaves, substituting solid marble for stone and slate, marble masonry, nothing more than painted plaster. Skyscraper rising like taxes, spiraling out of control as substandard steel warps and mud-mixed water cracks. Ill-fitted fire doors and faulty fire alarms perfectly accompanying the swap-mart second-hand sprinkler system. God watches on laughing at man's free will to turn this monumental monolith into a death trap disguised as designer domicile. Glazed panes rattling into mica frames, and unforeseen wind factors break like waves against inadequate storm barriers. But blind bureaucracy taking bribes and bungs signs off on site and hands the builders the keys to the city. And poem.
Great read there, Rex. And what a wonderful write by Incubus. I gave this one the gold in the contest because I thought he did an excellent job of writing the bringing the Tower of Babel idea to modern times. First of all, Pink Floyd blaring out One Brick in the Wall, it's Cowboy Contractors Cut Corners, Cuttlefish Cement Mixed. I liked the idea of Pink Floyd. I thought Pink Floyd One Brick in the Wall was an excellent, great way to start this poem, and the idea that you could just picture Pink Floyd playing. And the main theme I got from this, I mentioned this in my short comment, but I thought this had strong imagery and metaphors, and I liked, to me, it took a look at the way, many ways that modern society has become a slave to consumerism. There's that idea of the, as it says, a suburban slave substituting solid marble for stone and slate, marble masonry, nothing more than painted plaster. The way people cut corners, you know, okay, you know, first of all, you know, how the idea of the suburban family, the perfect family, the hiding behind our suburban lifestyle. But there's also to me this idea of how oftentimes to build homes for people who have less money, like low-income housing, you know, there's corners cut, you know, and skyscraper rising like taxes spiraling out of control as substandard steel warps and mud-mixed mortar cracks, ill-fitted fire doors and faulty fire alarms. There's to me, this real strong sense of greed, of looking out for simply for oneself, for one's moment in the spotlight, as the other poem said. And I really like the alliteration in this, but blind bureaucracy taking bribes and bungs signs off on sight and hands the builders the keys to the city, giving people the keys to the city that don't deserve it, but they knew how to play their cards, they knew how to mess with people using the power that they had. So, like I said, it just brought the idea of the seeking of power that's in the story of the Tower of Babel, and brought it into modern times and modern consumerism. I thought that was very well done. And your thoughts, Rex?
Regulatory, although you need some, but within that regulatory angle, there is way too much corruption that can be hit on. Hey, there's people being people. Hey, you know what? You need some money, you find the weak link in the chain, all of a sudden that weak link is being paid to look the other way for something. cowboy contractors. Kind of hits me with that angle of the mafia getting into the cement business and offering up garbage cement, which summarily disintegrates somewhere down the line. And the thought would be the cheap steel, the bent steel, that bites up the notion of we handed off our own steel industry, which was the best in the world, to now we're buying Chinese steel, and it crap. The idea of the wholesale sellout of the arena because of the burdens of this, that, and the other thing, and all the palms you got to grease to actually get something done.
I like that. I like that you mentioned the people that are actually going to get something done, and the weak link, and the idea of, you know, dismissing those that you consider to be the weak link, or that person that you, you know, and yeah, I think that was a very good point that you made about, you know, the people who actually get something done. So, excellent comment there, Rex. And what do we got next?
Babel by Emmanuel.
All right. Let me do some shuffling here. All right, here we go. Babel by Mamia, and it goes like this. We sang hallelujah and raised our hands in praise, all in one voice, one language, one tongue. We raised our voices to be heard by the one as we gather together from all corners and ways. To reach him in his throne, we decided to build a tower like no other, a tower to reach his abode. We started to erect it in the middle of a crossroad. Glass and steel, iron and sand, brick and mortar filled. We built it up higher and higher to reach the skies, longing to see the face of him whose name is above all names. We did not seek renown nor any form of fame, but we also know these were mere lies. More and more came in to see our tower. More and more came to build our community. But something was amiss. There was a disparity. Something insinuated itself in our rosy bower. I realized our voices were no longer the same. Our tongues diluted, muddy, diverse. Fights broke out. I finally saw the curse. There was a crack on the tower's frame, and it all fell down with all of us inside it. He who we only wanted to see brought us down in our hubris. We fell and he let us drown. In the end, the community we built just split. End poem. And I really liked that one. Powerful, right? And your thoughts, Rex?
What we once considered a dream to meet the Almighty, even though we lied to ourselves knowing that it wasn't about us, yes, it was about us. And the fact that we wanted that to insinuate ourselves in that heavenly realm before it was our time to do so. And the thought of gathering more people in to the infighting started. You've diluted that which you started out with, which was a false premise to begin with. And now it is an even muddier premise. And the idea that it all fell down with all of us inside it, that was a great touch. He, who we only wanted to see, brought us down in our hubris. We fell, and he let us drown. In the end, the community we built just split. The propagation of that, which is when you get too many opposing factions who want their importance above all else, hey, you know what? You don't build anything. You just split it.
Absolutely. Yeah, and I like that you touched on that part about, you know, that wanting only to see his face, and then, but, you know, we knew we were telling ourselves lies. So excellent comment there, Rex. Yeah, I really like this story-style poem. I like that it had some nice rhyme to it, so little bits of alliteration that worked really well. I like that that it takes a look at the story of the Tower of Babel, but, you know, it also makes me think, it has a modern-day feel to it also. I really like this all the way through. I like the mention of we gather together from all corners and ways. And then also, but something was amiss. There was a disparity. Something insinuated itself in our rosy bower. Oftentimes when a family or community falls apart, there's that sense of disparity, of things that go unspoken. I also like that there was a mention of a crack on the tower's frame, and that they were all in there, in the tower when it came down, which, you know, I don't know, I don't think the original story says whether they were all in the tower. I don't get the impression they were, but I like that Mam-Yaw added that because to me it makes me think of a couple of things. First of all, it makes me think about how when something comes falling down, like when people are working together on a project, on an idea, on, you know, a goal, falls apart when there is that smallest crack in the foundation of the idea. And it also makes me think on the idea that, you know, we suffer the consequences of our own choices. So just a strong write and very well done. And what do we got next?
Disparity. The disparity is the disparity of thought that all need to be involved. We have to have this extreme tangent of diversity to make it work, and it doesn't work that way. It's great to have a diverse thought and diverse communal activity, but things don't get built that way. Things get built by people who actually know what they're doing, as opposed to having, yes, I have to have this one represented, this one represented, this one represented, when in essence they don't understand anything of what they're doing to begin with. If you're going to do it, you do it with those who know and understand what needs to be done and how to do it. And then you employ those on a lower level who understand what they're supposed to do in getting that vision seen. It doesn't work that way with complete diversity. It comes with the thought of you put the best people into the job to make sure the job is actually being done correctly. That's where the crack comes from.
That is a really excellent point. And you're right that, you know, that makes a lot of sense. Well, because, yeah, I mean, it's like that saying, too many cooks spoil the broth, or, you know, what is it, too many chiefs and not enough engines. I'm not sure, that's probably politically incorrect, sorry. But, you know, that idea that if you put the wrong person in the job, you know, wrong person in the leadership, wrong, the person who doesn't know what they're doing, and there becomes that crack. Or if you're giving everybody the same job or giving the jobs to the wrong people. And I like that you brought up the importance that diversity is important. It's important to have that those times where you think outside the box. But when there's a plan put in place and it's an intelligent plan and it's a plan that's working, it's not going to help to go running off and doing your own thing. Because if everybody goes running off doing their own thing, nothing gets accomplished. It's about working together. So really cool there, Rex. I like that. All right. And what do you got for us next?
Who claims to be so powerful as to control the gates of a kingdom? By time telling. Who claims to be so powerful as to control the gates of a kingdom? Build your towers of supremacy, but you will be no closer to the stars than the ants beneath your feet. In common we see, you see. In common you hear, I hear. In common we dream and reach beyond our realms. Human endeavor is rapid, bloated balloons of indecent beliefs of endeavor. Who dares to build so high to pedestal themselves to notice no one is key to a kingdom? Evolution encapsulates growth in isolation rooms, solitary confinement by language. Now, no one is a gatekeeper, and a race towards the stars has begun. End poem.
Excellent read there, right? I mean, sorry. I'm always... Excellent read there, Rex. Yes, that's it. Let's see. I thought I really liked this, right? I gave it the silver in the Babel contest. I like how, well, I think the end, first of all, the end line, I have to start there, wraps it up really nicely. I mean, the race towards the stars, the race for space has, you know, been going on since, what, like the 1950s or 60s, maybe before that. I like that it touches on the idea of a national or a worldwide sense of competitiveness, but also the competitiveness within the individual, within the human mind. And I like to me, and jumping back up to the beginning, you know, like who dares, you know, and then the lines, build your towers of supremacy, but you will be no closer to the stars than the ants beneath your feet. And I like how the stars are not only a representation of the, you know, that race for space, towards space, but also the idea that as much as we try to make ourselves, you know, gods, as much as we try to be the almighty, the all-powerful, and the all-knowing, we are not. And human endeavor is rapid bloating balloons of indecent beliefs of endeavor. I feel like this goes back to the idea of how foolishly we float away oftentimes and don't keep our feet on the ground when they're needed on the ground. We don't keep our mind focused in a certain direction, the direction they're supposed to be faced in, moving forward rather than there's to me the bloated balloons of indecent beliefs of endeavor. To me, really focuses on the bloated ego of humanity. And that's not one specific person or people, but just in general, how oftentimes humanity is so full of itself and floating away on these bloated ideas with no realization that they're never going to be the gods that they want to be. So just a strong write and very well done. And Rex, you did a wonderful read of that. Your thoughts?
All right. Evolution encapsulates growth in isolation rooms, solitary confinement by language. Now no one is gatekeeper. That there's a whole lot of truth in that. The idea of there being such differentiating entities across the world, country to country, belief to belief. There is no gatekeeper, as there really shouldn't be. But I'm like, who dares to build so high to pedestal themselves? I like that line, the thought of offering oneself up as the sitting on a pedestal, an icon, an idol to be mastered to. But also did it with pedestal, so kind of hits on that notion of someone who's full of shit themselves. No one is a key to a kingdom. That is that belief to sit on the top floor of a 50, 60, 100-story building and think yourself as of God, because you can look down on the minions and know no one can touch you in this realm because you are above everyone in between, Lord and Master, so to speak.
Absolutely. I like that you mentioned the idea of those who feel that they can't be touched, that they're, you know, and basically that brings to mind that people who get away with things that they shouldn't be getting away with because they feel they're in that realm of invincibility. I did like that you brought up the pedestal line, who dares to build so high to pedestal themselves. You know, that was definitely a strong line. So great observations there, Rex. All right, what do we got next?
There Was a Tower by Moshe. And that one's yours.
All right, There Was a Tower by Moshe 18. And it goes like this. I wrote them a simple love song. They called it blasphemy. I asked them a silly riddle. They shouted, let us be. I told them that I'm sorry. They said the answer's three. What in the words is going on? Your recipe for salvation is filled with sharpened nails. The postcards that I sent you stay rotting in your mail. You'll understand my meaning when I write this tune in Braille. What in the words is going on? My funeral rites are all nursery rhymes. My jokes are lamentations. You'll find me at my typewriter, engaged in flagellation. I'm hoping that this poem I wrote won't cause you constipation. What in the words is going on? Sorry. Oh. And Rex, your thoughts?
That question is the bite. And there's a nice touch of themology to having lost spirituality. I wrote them a simple love song. They called it blasphemy. I asked them a simple riddle. They shattered letters to be. I told them I'm sorry. They said the answer is three. So there's a misconfiguration of thought from that which is to that which now it is supposedly wanting to be. Your recipe for salvation is filled with sharpened nails. Boy, that's a hard-edged thought right there. Postcards that I sent you stay rotting in your mail. Unread emotions and thoughts. And then you'll never understand my meaning when I write this tune in Braille and what in the world is going on. Idea of, hey, I gave you everything to begin with that would have left you happy and content, yet you conspire. You twist that which is what I gave you, and now nothing is understood.
I like that. I like that. Really great observations there, Rex. You know, this was just really a clever and fun write. And, you know, just to me really gave thought to how topsy-turvy the nature of language and life is. And I have to commend Moshe. That line, what in the words is going on, just absolutely clever. First of all, it's a tricky for the reader not to say what in the world is going on. And I like that he repeats that thought, repeats that question. In, you know, the idea of, you know, searching for the meaning in poems. And oftentimes there's meanings and it eludes us. Or there, you know, everybody has a different interpretation. I feel like in part this is the idea of, you know, God speaking about humanity. I wrote them a simple love song. They called it blasphemy. Or perhaps even like, you know, to be honest, that first couple of lines, it makes me think of any rejected prophet. Or any prophet, like Khalil Gibran in his book, The Prophet. It gave thought to that. I have to agree that there was really some bite, there was a strong line in Your Recipe for Salvation is filled with sharpened nails. The postcard I sent you stays rotting in your mail. At that point, it almost feels like this idea of a person talking to a higher power, to a God, you know, saying, you know, you're not responding to me. And this, the end stanza just makes me think of being a poet in general, you know, being a poet and trying to get the right words out there, the right thoughts, and knowing somebody's going to have a negative reaction. Somebody's going to judge, you know, so just a really layered poem to me with a multitude of thoughts. And I thought this was very well done. And what do we got next?
Voice by Daniel Deschino. Of all the languages of the world, I choose kindness. I say hello with a smile. I show interest with widened eyes. I say friendship with an open hand, and I say love with open arms. Of all the ways to communicate in the world, I laugh with the rhythm of a conga. I love with a touch on a piano key. I dream on the wind from a saxophone, and I cry on a string to a violin. Of all the families in the world, I choose humanity. I am protected from mothers who watch over the future they create. I am guided by the fathers who advise the innocent. I play with my brothers and sisters who are everyone, and I grow with the children of the world of which we are always. End poem.
Great read there, Rex. I like that Daniel took a different approach. I gave him bronze. I thought, you know, instead of looking at the focus of the negativity of the story, you know, which I don't even know if the activity is right, the word, but the moral consequences, the whatever, you know, the loss and the struggles within the story and within the painting. He took a look at how we choose to communicate, choose to present ourselves to the world. And I really like this all the way through. A great opening of all the languages of the world. I choose kindness. And, you know, even when you're having a bad day, there are things you choose. You choose your attitude. You choose how you treat other people. I also really like that he brought music in because music is that universal voice. I choose music. I laugh with the rhythm of a conga. I love with a touch on a piano key. I dream on the wind from a saxophone. I mean, wonderful lines there. Out of all the families in the world, I choose humanity. And I could just read every line of this poem and be delighted with it. But what I like about that end thought is the idea that family doesn't have to be who's biologically related to you. It doesn't have to be, you know, who gave birth to you or who provided the seed for your creation. You know, it's about loving one another, loving the world and the family of humanity. So absolutely just a heartfelt right and very well done. And your thoughts, Rex?
Well, Daniel offers up voice. There's a ministerial approach to this, not those those big farmed ministries that offer all gab and promise and deliver nothing. This comes from a communal, more of a community activated minister, the voice that sings in that which one wants their community to be, and there let it grow from the out, from the inside out, as opposed to wanting to be the world's voice, because that's not working. If everything went back to the way it was started, there might be a whole lot better thought across the world itself if what was taught was actually taught within each other's community and on that which everybody can agree to. That's what this is all about.
I like that. I like that you mentioned it has a minstrel type voice, and you know the idea of people agreeing that, you know, this is what it's all about, the kindness, the love. I know you didn't say kindness or love, but you know, those are the thoughts that came to my mind as you were commenting. So really great observations there, Rex. And what do we got next?
Babble On by Jason John Morgan. And tar and vanity attempt to pierce the heavens until confronted with pandemonium. Painted by the elder, resurrected by the ghoul, communication broken down into gibberish. quid latine dictum sit altum videtur, statumo qui cara ociro, immobilized justice, undone from inside plans, confused tongues flailing in the wind, scattered ideas riding the wind, lost, never to be found. This is just another story for the Tower of Babel. End poem.
Wonderful read there, Rex. Bravo. This is an excellent brevity by Jason John Morgan. You know, I really liked his use of the Latin and the Japanese. Very cool there. I also thought, you know, and when it comes to brevity, you can't have a single wasted word. You got to, you know, use words that have depth to them. I thought, you know, painted by the elder was a great way word to, for me, that it spoke of the Father God, and resurrected by the ghoul. You know, the ghoul, I thought, you know, was a great word to describe, you know, to be the Holy Spirit. At least that's how I took it. Undone from inside plans. You know, oftentimes, and this works for the idea of the power of Babel and on a level of, I forget the word I'm searching for, but, you know, on you know, the job market. But it also works on an individual level, is so oftentimes it's our own choices, or oftentimes we get betrayed by friends. You know, we have the enemy, the people we think are our enemies, and we have the people that we think are our friends. And sometimes it's that inside job. And oftentimes, as far as leadership for country goes, oftentimes the undoing comes from the inside. And just really a wonderful, thought-provoking light, bringing the pandemonium, which I love that word, pandemonium. That's a great word. You know, of modern times into this realm of gibberish. So very well done. And your thoughts, Rex?
I'm trying to figure out what that last line says. Saru mo ki kara ochiro.
It says in his AN.
No, it doesn't, actually.
Oh. It doesn't. Oh, I looked it up, but I already forgot. It is, okay. You mean the Japanese?
Yeah.
I know. I looked this up before. Let me do that.
Even a monkey falls from a tree.
Yep.
And that one, everything in Latin seems something, or seems more powerful or something, the Latin angle. Okay. I like that. A little bit of poignant, funny, sickness, calling us the monkeys. Even a monkey falls from a tree. Yeah, okay.
Yeah, that adds a nice touch of humor to it.
Yep. Well, that kind of bites on the thought of communication broken down into gibberish. Then we're thrown back to the monkey angle of things. I like the pun in this, because it does speak to vanity, brick and tar, because he hits on that notion of come, let us make bricks and bake them thoroughly. They use brick instead of stone and tar for mortar. Then they said, come, let us build a city with a tower that reaches the heavens, so that we may make a name for ourselves. Otherwise, we'll be scattered over the face of the whole earth. And then the idea of what was God's thought. And then the scattering, so to speak. The idea of possibility over impossibility. And to reach the stars in that vein of vanity does hit on the idea of thinking ourselves more than worthy to sit alongside or at the throne instead of beneath, which is kind of the idea of what it all sits to be about to begin with. And that being just another story for the Tower of Babel. I like the thought with the both the Latin and the Japanese in there. Sagamoki, Kara Ochiro. Yes, monkeys.
Yes, I did too. I like that you brought up the vanity that, you know, pushes people to go where they necessarily shouldn't be going, because, you know, the idea of how full of themselves people are. And I too thought the, you know, the Latin and the Japanese was a great touch, especially with, because it did add that kind of idea of humor, of being the monkeys in the trees. So excellent, right? And great comments there, Rex. All right. What do you got for us next?
The last one. Bent spine and swallowed sword.
By so and so. Okay. This is the bent spine and swallowed swords, which obviously is by me. And it goes like this. Her spine is an accordion mountain played beneath the weight of expectations, plucked petals hot glued to a matron's skirt. The satisfaction of the quick peep leaves her soul bared to the teeth of the jackal. She walks in the deformity of three heels and glossy ribbons knotted, a best of show breed howling the pain of beauty, led in the watering trough to the watering trough of swallowed swords. Too many times she has smiled at someone else's joy, only to find her own dreams leaking into a gutter of clowns, puddles of tears upon torn petticoats, flying saucers of storm clouds. The leash yankers said her emotions were too much to walk their paved roads, so she adopted the gait of Mother Bear and devoured them, remembering stains upon starch creases made her appetite a giant in a pulsing sky. She never forgot the walk of shame or the claws that smothered her voice, so she bit the palms that once fed her lies. End poem.
Great read. Never forgot the walk of shame. Well, there's a double implication in that note. Some of the other language. It sounds a bit like you can blame that which is as opposed to which that you want it to be. But obviously with that walk of shame, there's a thought of some self-involvement with that walk of shame. And so she bit the palms that once fed her lies. Well, that also is twofold. A little gnawing pleasure at biting herself for falling into that realm, or actually hitting on the sort of those who fed some of those lies too. So, yeah, might walk the walk and talk the talk, but sometimes you don't get what you want, and you end up on the bottom end of the shoe.
Interesting. Thank you, Rex. I appreciate the comment. I like that observation. I entered this contest from that Passions Thomas ran for her 16th AP anniversary, and you were supposed to pick a number, and then you would get your prompt. So I picked number 6 because, you know, that's my birth month. And she said, number 6 gets to pick their own prompt. And I was like, oh, well, shit. That didn't work out like expected. But I already had this, this is a Lenore Finney painting. I already had Lenore Finney bookmarked as potential, contest for Break On Through. So I thought, well, I'll choose Lenore Finney art right to that for this contest. And then when I run a contest for Break On Through, you know, if the rights needed, I'll have it for the show. And I liked your observations. So very cool there. And well, now, as I like to tell everyone, make sure to keep an eye out on the contests and topic boards put up by our late night poets, hosts and hostesses. You're sure to find something to inspire. Join us later tonight, 10 p.m. Eastern U.S. time, Fill My Eyes and Company, for open poetry. And then Saturday, 12:30 a.m. Eastern U.S. time, will be part sinner, part saint with Aphasiana and Babbler. What else is going on? Well, as was mentioned at the beginning of the show, and I'll mention them again, is Rex has two contests running, one for Sunday's Rhythm and Rhyme, and they both need rights, featuring music from Taylor Hawkins and the Foo Fighters, and one for Tuesdays After Midnight with Rex and Tam, and that's got quotes from Alfred Hitchcock. For Wednesday, Fill My Eyes is running a contest, The Art of Seduction, Pablo Neruda prompt. She's got a beautiful painting prompt plus a Pablo Neruda poem for an inspiration for sensual rights. And then the contests I am running for upcoming shows, I have two of them, and they also need rights. But particularly for Tuesdays, Twisted Tuesdays, I'm running a contest, the artwork of Jeff Soto. And his artwork is considered pop, surrealism pop or pop surrealism. And I recommend that people check it out. To me, it's just fun stuff. It's dark, but it's also quirky. It makes, I think, spiritual and social commentary. And I don't know, I just really enjoy the artwork, and I'm definitely looking forward to that show. So thank you as always, Rex, for being an amazing co-host. I truly appreciate you and your time. Thank you to Robbie for hanging on the board. Thank you to everyone who wrote for the show, is listening now, or will be listening later. We truly appreciate you all. And if there are people out there who are considering calling in but haven't gotten there yet, just remember that you are always welcome to call in. And we just always appreciate you all and all your voices. And all right. What do you say, Rex? Any closing
words?
Good
night. Nope.
Good night.
That's all she wrote.
There you go. All right. Good night, Rex. Good night, everybody.
Good night.